I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we're back for episode 112 of Digital Divination, and we begin with
I'm an employee of Wizards of the Coast, and my opinions are mine and not theirs.
Oh, he got it in so fast.
Sold American.
Oh, all right. Okay. You know, that reminds me of, like, the disclaimers, you know, they have at the end of, like, commercials and stuff, where they have to say them super fast, so they hire the guy who can enunciate very clearly, but put, like, 1,000 words in, you know, 10 seconds.
The Micro Machines guy.
The Micro Machines guy. I know. I think we're just old enough to remember that they actually had sort of this cult of personality around the individual who was really good at talking super fast.
Yes.
All right. The individuals, I'm sure.
Now that we got that out of the way. So this is the Sunday after Free RPG Day, which was...
Happy Free RPG Day to all those who celebrate.
It's now Free RPG Boxing Day. Is that what this would be?
Oh, yes. I guess it's Boxing. But isn't Boxing Day where, like, you do returns? We're not going to do that.
Yeah, it is.
Wait. I thought it was when you boxed up stuff and, like, gave it to your servants. Is that not right?
I have no idea.
I always thought it was boxing up stuff for returns, but that might be it. More modern concept than...
Yes.
Probably what Ron, you're probably right. Now that you say it, it sounds more correct.
But it was like the stuff you didn't want that you boxed up for them, probably.
Yeah, right. Yes.
So
the official regifting holiday. Yeah.
All right. Oh. You know, it's funny. I got back into gaming because of Free RPG Day.
Oh. Wait, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was Rob Helm. Get your story straight, John Godet.
It is. Okay. I will tell you. Rob Helm invited me to Gadgets and Gizmos because he was going to run a RuneQuest module for Free RPG Day. And that's where I met Scott Keim, who happened to come in as well.
Who I saw yesterday at Free RPG Day when I tell my Free RPG Day story. But anyway, I don't want to get ahead.
Yes. So Free RPG Day. Well, Ron, why don't you tell your story, but it also tell us what it is, what it, Free RPG Day is.
Free RPG Day is it is an organization that is on the theme of Free Comic Book Day, which happens, I want to say, in May every year. I'm not sure. I used to celebrate both, but
you're lapsed.
I'm a lapsed Free Comic Book Day. Well, I mean, it turned into a lapsed Free RPG Day. Oh, more teaser. Anyway, it is an organization that allows game companies to provide product that then gets shipped to game stores to give away. And I think there are several rules involved with it. Some of them I know very specifically, and some of them that I know from my time at Paizo. Like, you can't, I think it's against the rules to make anything that you get from Free RPG to any of the products that's given to a store to give out, you can't make them contingent upon sales. They have to be like a thing you just give away. Now you can do like a raffle or a roll-off or something for them. I've seen stores that do that. This has been going on for years. But it can't be like, if you have to buy $50 in product before you get one of these things. I think that's against the rules. And then I think even though they encourage companies to come out with products that help games or quick start guide to existing games, that's a suggestion and that's not specifically a rule. I know there have been game systems where they've said, look, we're supposed to be doing like intro games or something like that. We're not, right? Here's another adventure for our game system. It can't be something that it can't be repackaged. It has to be new for Free RPG Day. It has to be labeled Free RPG Day. And then if a company does later want to resell it the way Paizo does, there's like a 30-day embargo on it, right? So Paizo can't give away the PDFs for the stuff they did for Free RPG Day for 30 days, or sell it in physical copy or whatever. A lot of companies that are doing like dice or miniatures or the like will do that. Dice trays I've seen for Free RPG Day, a lot of things. But a lot of the companies that produce physical RPG products, like, you know, character guides or adventures or quick starts of the rules or things like that, have like physical paper that you get, little booklets, 16-page booklets usually, or sometimes smaller, and sometimes like dimensionally smaller, right? Sometimes they get little booklets that you can get for stuff. But anyway, they've been doing this for years. I had a friend of mine who ran a game store for a little while when I lived in Illinois, and sort of got to see it from sort of the game person's ordering perspective. And, you know, I worked on free RPG Day products for Paizo, as far as developing them and, you know, making sure they're shoehorned into the schedule, et cetera. So I've seen this from a lot of different sides. To this year, though, my wife is out of town, so I was on, you know, kid duty. They're teens, right? So it's hardly, you know, a lot of it. But I'd agreed to take them to go see a movie. I said, hey, but we got to stop at a game store first, you know, because it's this free RPG day. And then maybe afterwards, stop at another game store, right? And kids come with me. Because one of the things that I learned way back in Illinois is if you show up for free RPG day, a lot of stores will want to limit it. They'll want to give each, you know, every patron who comes in only one thing. Well, if you want two or three things, then you better bring in two or three kids with you, because then they each can get one too. Anyway, so we went to Mox Boarding House here, but we were late enough that they'd already given away everything. We missed it. But I did run into Scott Keim that I mentioned, who was also sort of dejectedly leaving the store on his way up to Zulu's in Bothell to see if he could get something there. I said, well, I'd love to come right up to Zulu's in Bothell. I love that store, but I promised to take my kids to a movie that starts in about 10 minutes, and maybe I'll swing by afterward. So he went up there. I said, text me though, if you've got good luck or whatever. And so we got out of the movie. I think we got out of the movie at 3:57, and I had a text from Scott. I checked. He said, they're doing it until 4 p.m. I'm like, oh, there's no way I'm going to get up there till anyway. So, my son had been talking about how excited he was to go to Olive Garden for dinner. So instead we spent like a leisurely dinner at Olive Garden instead of going up to Zulu's. And I did not have my face pressed up against the window in the direction of Bothell, like, you know, a urchin in Dickens' story, you know, oh, if only I could be out there. But it meant I got nothing for free RPG day this year.
Wow. Wow. Well, as I was kind of mentioning before, I got back into gaming because of free RPG day in 2017, I believe it was.
Okay.
Where I, at the request of a friend of ours, that game with us on Intrepid Heroes, Rob Helm, went there. He was going to be running a RuneQuest game for free RPG day at Gadgets and Gizmos, which was attached to Vernon Wells there in Kirkland, and is no longer a game store anymore. But that was at that point, I saw where they had all this cool stuff to give away. I got a copy of First Contact for Starfinder there, and I still have that.
That's right. That was the year for First Contact.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I met Scott Keim. And he actually invited myself and Rob to play Pathfinder with him, which eventually led us to playing Starfinder and Intrepid Heroes and meeting Ron and inviting Ron for that and meeting Jason. So, you know, I think Free RPG Day has been very important to me in that regard, and also being introduced to Scott. Now, I have a bunch of family up here on the island right now, and I was thinking, there was one game store in Command. I don't know if you've been to it, Ron. It's a tiny little place called Scatter Deck Games. They have a handful of Paizo stuff there and Renegade stuff and things like that. So I thought, oh man, I'll try to get by there. Didn't have time before, too late. And they're primarily a Magic place, like a lot of game stores as well. But I was actually thinking, maybe they might have leftovers today. I don't know. But I'm hoping that one of the three of us knows something about what Paizo released for free RPG day.
What could it be? What could it be? I myself didn't get out to any stores. On Saturday I was volunteering at an animal shelter in the morning, and then I completely forgot that it was a free RPG day by the time we was done. But I did leave the traditional plate of milk and cookies out for Scott Keim, and he got them. So
yes,
Good job. But anyway, I should have said milk and dice.
Yes.
Plate of dice, just for Scott.
Dice and cookies.
Yeah. Paizo Stuff is, funnily enough, second contact for Starfinder, which is a kind of a homage to First Contact, but also new creature stats for the playtest version of second edition of Starfinder, but some other little bits and bobs that are useful to run these monsters. And then the Pathfinder offering is a little venture called The Great Toy Heist by me.
By Jason.
Come on.
Keeley. Jason
me Keeley. That's a fun little, a lot of the adventures, and I think I have written a fair number of free RPG Day adventures at this point. Basically all the Skinner Manor ones for Starfinder did I do one for Pathfinder? No, this might be the first Pathfinder one. I can't, it all blends together because I'm writing the Moser and a Starfinder one, and it feels like, and so I forget that this might be the first Pathfinder one I've written. And in the past two, Pathfinder's done the goblins once, right? We be goblins, right. You get to play as the goblins, right? So it's kind of a tradition to pick a kind of a fun ancestry to sort of make everyone play as that and bring an adventure around a misfit group of goblins or leshies or poppets or skittermanders or what have you. It's not exclusive. Like there's been plenty of other free RPG Day adventures where you're just, they come with pre-gen, so you can pick them up and play them. But other ones that are just like, one that's related a bit to the Strength of Thousands one. That's sort of a prequel to that, I think, kind of thing.
And that was the one that I developed, was Thresholds of Knowledge, which was sort of the prequel one to Strength of Thousands.
The Great Toy Heist was fun sec to write. The idea was just sort of, again, we're sort of, I think Diego might have come to me about like, oh, we might do some of this. We should have tossed around some general ideas about what we should be like. Oh, maybe you're, familiars or clones or weird monsters or something like that. Like, well, we just do poppets. And then of course the title often sometimes comes first. I didn't necessarily put the word poppet in the title because doesn't have as much cash right to it as the word toy. You don't know what you're getting, but poppets, thinking about poppets, thinking about Muppets, the title is of course a riff on The Great Muppet Caper. And so it's about you're playing four poppets who come to life in the capital of Agorian, Chelyx's capital. There's a toy shop there that's just sort of some hand wave stuff, like, oh, there's ley lines or whatever, toys in there always come to life. There's a Geppetto type figure, and there's a evil baron, a greedy baron who's like got the deed to the land through underhanded, diabolic means, and he's going to close the toy shop down. So you have to go and you break into the baron's manor and steal the deed, basically. The adventure opens with you sort of coming out of a box inside the baron's manor and be like, oh, he can't believe. You get sent these toys. He didn't think, he threw it in the closet and didn't think anything of it, right? But it's four toys. There is a marionette who has the ghost of a rogue in her. There is a tin wizard, so he's like a little sparking tin toy, and he's just called the Tin Wizard. There is a barbarian stuffed bunny rabbit.
And what's the stuffed bunny rabbit's name, Jason?
The stuffed bunny rabbit's name is Cutie Kill Stuff. Cutie is the name given to them. Kill Stuff is the name they took when they decided they, got into the whole bar. And they're very much about protecting the shop. And then there's a stuffed hellhound named Hellpup. Hellpup. Mm-hmm. And that one was the saddest story background to write. That as I was writing it, made myself very sad. Hellpup gets kind of like thrown out of the toy shop and comes to life outside of the toy shop, and they're scared and alone. They don't know what's going on. They get caught. They get their, it's the funny is they get a bit of their leather caught in a fence and it rips off, but then that becomes their familiar. The Hell Pup is a witch. So they have a little bat familiar made out of a piece of their own leather, named Flappy. I think that the bat familiar is named. And then Cutie comes and rescues them and brings them back to the toy shop. So it's got a happy ending, and then they all get together to steal something.
It's a heist by toys.
It's a heist by toys. Exactly.
It is. And I was really excited about this. I was mentioning to you guys that one of the things my wife and I have been talking about is how do we get people who haven't played Pathfinder Second Edition before? How do we run like a specific, concrete, you know, sort of limited session? What makes a good story with great characters that are hooked in to be good first experience to Pathfinder Second Edition? And people can do the beginner box or one of the sort of starter type APs like Abomination Vaults. But that's if you're going to kind of keep going with it. What is it if you just want to show it off in one easily digestible piece? It's easy to understand who your characters are, what their motivations are, and you do the thing, and in one short evening, you're done. And we were both thinking that from the description, the Great Toy Heist is exactly that. And so we were excited to get it. Saddening me further, and I have to wait 30 days to get it, but I'll happily wait 30 days. Yeah. So in order to get at the adventure, you said so.
Yeah. So Ron, can you tell us about this love of poppets that you have?
Man, do I love poppets. Okay. So this goes, how far back do we want to go? I'll go only this far back. I was hired on by Paizo as a freelance developer to basically outline, assign, develop the text for Adventurer's Armory 2. Adventurer's Armory had been a very successful standalone player companion book. They wanted to do another one to that. And when I was thinking about the things that ought to go in, of course, more armor, more weapons, et cetera, I wanted to have some specific rules items that went in the back, you know, like here's just a spread of vehicles or two spreads of something. And so what I came up with was basically animated toys called puppets. And I gave the assignment went to Linda Zayas Palmer. I don't know that I specifically picked Linda. I think somebody else, because I was just a freelance developer. I don't think I picked the freelancers and did their contracts or anything. I would have done that. An employee would have done that. But Linda Zayas Palmer is the one that ended up writing that. And it was fantastic. And I loved it. And I loved the art in the Adventurer's Armory 2. And when it came around to second edition for the Absalom Grand Bazaar book, the Lost Omens book, they wanted Luis and Eleanor. We're going to put a new ancestry in there. And we're thinking about bringing poppets and tying that, because every new rules item in that book is associated with a specific shop. And they wanted to associate this new ancestry with a specific shop, and having a toy shop be poppets. They thought that might work. And I eagerly jumped in order to insist that I write it. And it was fantastic. One of the things that's fun about Pathfinder Second Edition ancestries is that you bring the heritages, you know, what type of this ancestry are you? And in the case of poppets, it's how did you, what animates you, right? Whether you're sort of wind up, or whether you're just made of poofy fluff, or whether a ghost is of somebody else's in you, like with the marionette, or whether you're, my favorite is Wishborn, right? Where just some innocent person just wished so hard for you to come to life that you just did. Anyway, so I've been very excited about poppets. I will take one step further back than that. Why did poppets even get into my mind? Poppet being sort of a great Britishism type word for just a little, you know, mop-headed kid or whatever. My character in Reign of Winter was a witch named Nettle. And Nettle's familiar was basically a wicker doll, a little wicker doll that she just called her poppet. And so Nettle and poppet became kind of a theme there. Well, as you get higher and higher level in Pathfinder First Edition as your witch, your poppet gets more and more ability, or your familiar gets more and more abilities. And so I just loaded on everything that was like terrifying that you possibly could. So this wicker, basically this little wicker doll had this aura of fear, and it had wings it could unfurl, and it could breathe fire on people. And it had like four different melee attacks or something like that. So it was about how this wicker doll would unfold and be like the most hideous thing. And I think if you ask the other players in that campaign today, they absolutely will remember Poppet, but they probably won't remember the name of the character that I played who Poppet belonged to, because Poppet was just so memorable. Anyway, that's why Poppet was stuck in my head as being sort of a cutesy thing that is in fact super ferocious. So when I saw Cutie kill stuff as the stuff, I thought that was wonderful.
Yeah, I think there was also, I don't know if I remember putting in there or if it stayed in there about what their sword is named too. They named their sword at one point. I closed all that. We also play with the idea. We thought about the idea of that toy shop that is in Grand Bazaar, having that be part of the focus of the adventure. But we went with it. We couldn't tie in an adventure that well into that and into what was going on there. So we decided to make up a new one. And, Dale was like, we haven't really been to Agorian that much lately, have we? You know, let's go back there for just a little bit, even though it's, you don't see much of it. You don't go around the streets of it. You're just in this manor house. But why not have these puppets fight for good in, that the devil infested land of Cheliax?
Oh, I like it because that just helps with the direction, right? It's like, this is not, you don't have to worry whether you're taking the contract from somebody who's maybe good or maybe bad or maybe a rival. No, literally is a guy in the devil land who has used evil devil influence in order to pull the contract back in a super evil way, right? You don't, you don't have to pause to reflect upon the morality of what you're doing.
No, no.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about second contact. Now that's, that's quite a bit different than the Great Toy Heist. Toy Heist, in that,
say that five times fast.
Yeah, no. I know. It's not an adventure, but it's more of a alien archive of sorts for the second edition playtest, including, from what I've been able to read online, because it's not all. This is just from the description, right? So it has the Asteray, Crest Eater, Ferrofluid Ooze, Glass Serpent, Computer Glitch Gremlin, the Tastari and Tastari Alpha, the Nihili. How do you say that? Is that right? Nihili?
Nihili, yeah. Nihili? I never really thought about Nihili. It's like nihilism.
Yeah,
Nihili.
I'm thinking basically. Nihilism, but it's...
Yeah.
So, Nihili. Flat-ish. Yeah. The Squawks, Train Squawks, M. Gannett, I don't know what that is, and the Bastorox, Observer Class Security Robot, Protection Class Security Robot, and the Cybernetic Zombie, which is actually one of my favorite things. So what I'd be interested in hearing, Jason, if you could expand on this some, because I know you can look at this, and although it's embargoed to download, you can talk about it.
I can talk about it, yeah.
Yeah. What type of changes do we see in these? Do you know?
I mean, these are now, in the sort of second edition framework, all of these creatures. So there's the math has obviously been tweaked to fit that for their levels. And, abilities are given action costs and so forth and so on. But now you'll forgive me if I don't quite remember exact specifics from the first edition, which of what they do. But if we talk about like the security robots, they look pretty similar, right? They have integrated weapons and they shoot you, and they have they can get like a nanite surge to heal themselves, or there's actually like a couple bits in here, actually a couple for like the security robot and the zombie have like, in the second edition bestiary for like zombie and skeleton and lich and stuff like that, there's some like bonus ability. Like you can make your own flavor of, say, security robot by adding one of these extra abilities, right?
Wow.
So this is so you can modify them. So there's not only just the base stat blocks, just extra little bits that you can throw in there, right? For instance, if you wanted to have a robot that was a fire extinguisher, you could add this fire suppressing ability to one of them. The robots, they're robots. They have integrated weapons, and they shoot them. they're pretty standard security robot stuff, right?
So, so basically, it was the conversion. We don't see a lot of big changes in lore or theme or looks.
Yeah,
or
I think I would
overall
say all the
abilities
lore
and things.
The lore seems pretty on the same level as the sort of first edition lore. So the, those two creatures you mentioned that you don't know what they are members of the Swarm.
Oh,
they're okay. Sort of new members of the Swarm, and
right,
there's a,
right. Oh,
a,
yeah.
A good,
yeah.
A good chunk of explanation of what the Swarm is and where they where it came from. So people who pick this up for the first time, if you haven't played any Starfinder, can understand what they are immediately. And it's the same thing. Robots, you know, they're security robots. Here's the Asteray. It's the space siren, basically. Here's right. the here's the Tashdari or Laser Wolf. You know, that's right. all you need to know. What a crest eater is and what whose crests it eats. but for instance, so if we took out, like, you know, keeping the same names, Observer class security robot and Protection class security robot, I think from way back when. One of the things that is sort of added, what you can see here for the Protection class robot is a an ability called Covering Posture. It's a two-action ability. Basically grants adjacent allies the benefits of lesser cover until the start of its next turn. A creature of medium or smaller size befitting from the cover, from the position can take cover to gain the benefits of standard cover. So you get lesser cover. Or you can take an action to get standard cover. Fitting into the protection robe name, yeah, right? Protection class. I like that. Mm-hmm. It does a little bit of protection. It's got, maybe it's got a bit of a shield. I would say that also all the art in here is also brand new and
right.
looking very good. I don't even think, that's a new art.
Yeah, a lot of these creatures have, even though quite a few of them have been in Starfinder First Edition before, I think that security robot is the only one that was in First Contact.
That's true. Yes. That makes sense. Yeah. A lot of these ones we made up afterwards. That was wanted to get some basic stuff down. And this Second Contact here does get a lot of good basic stuff. There's nothing in here that's too high level. Well, I take that back. The Asteray is level 12. But nothing that's like, most of it is lower level. Ones, threes, twos, fives, that kind of stuff.
That's surprising. I remember the Glass Serpent. Do you remember the Glass Serpent when
it was really tough? The thing that's sort of functionally invisible and then it like grabs you and squeezes you and
eats you. Yeah. It could eat you. It's so big.
It can eat you up. The Glass Serpent, I think that was still a CR5 creature. And it still is a level 5 creature, but it is tough. It's still pretty tough, and it's still naturally invisible, right?
Yeah.
Although when it is swallowed someone whole, it is not as invisible.
Yes.
Because you can see the person.
Just the person's right there.
Yeah, like, oh, I kind of know where it is
they're
now.
They're doing pantomimes. What are they trying to say with a pantomime?
but it can wrap around, like grab you and wrap around you and make you concealed through its invisibility, right? Hiding you. No, it knows where you are, so it can eat you better, but it can wrap, coil around you and kind of make you difficult to spot. This one's got some, basically, you know, some newer abilities, sort of more explanations of, you know, how Swallow Hole and all that invisibility stuff works.
So it does explain. So these probably showcase some of the new descriptions for creature abilities as well then.
It doesn't give you, it doesn't explain Swallow Hole word for word for word, right? That sort of, probably there's a bit, you know, because that takes up a lot of space, so generally, right?
Right.
It just gives you the sort of Swallow Hole line in the stat block that says, it can swallow someone large, takes an action, the largest size creature,
you take this much
bludgeoning damage, you need the rupture value of the stomach, right?
Mm-hmm. But for now, you'd go to the monster core in order to see what that meant.
Exactly.
Even though it's going to be in whatever the monster book for Starfinder is.
Yeah, right. Whatever.
So these are in the monster core as well?
No, they're not. No,
the description sort of, like, of the ability.
So, like you need Pathfinder Second Edition to play the Great Toy Heist, you do need Player Core and Monster Core to sort of use this.
Got it. I understand that part. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But also, when the playtest rulebook comes out, you'll be able to use that in some way. You'll have more stuff.
Right.
Well, you could, even if you're going to use the Pathfinder Second Edition rules as sort of the backdrop, you could use it now. One thing I've heard people say when sort of wistfully gazing at the product I don't have, Second Contact, is that a lot of the creatures are low enough level that you could use them with the field test rules that have been produced, which is only very low level, in order to have like a pretty robust set of just field test only, here's my characters, and set them up against a short adventure with here's a bunch of monsters now. So
yeah, well, field test 5 is a couple encounters, right? And they are against some cybernetic zombies and a glass serpent there. So we're already sort of in use. So here, so you can, and I think the stat blocks are in there, but I don't know how they compare. If there's been any tweaking since the field test or not. But for the most part, you know, yeah, they're here. Some good maps that are in field test 5. I think there's also actually an additional creature, like an Aeon guard in field test 5. So yeah. Could be wrong about that though. Again, sort of like you've got like 12 is the highest level creature here, and there's one 6th level swarm creature. But for the most part, yeah, you can use these with the field test rules. Yeah, I mean, or wait until August.
What's interesting, I'll say, is that I at PaizoCon online, I ran the latest Starfinder special, which is supposed to get you into the last season of organized play, but also kind of foreshadow some stuff that's going to happen in the transition to second edition. And surprise, surprise, there's a lot of swarm in that. So when you mentioned having these two swarm creatures here as part of this, I'm thinking, I think we're going to revisit the whole swarm thing, maybe coming out at the beginning of second edition.
Well, when you see that there's specifically a spot, one of the things that is in this, which is very cool, is on the inside front cover, is a galaxy map taken mainly from Travel Guide. That's a Lost Omens product.
Ports of Call.
Mainly taken from Ports of Call. We got this sort of space map, right? And it is, you know, labeled with all the places that are in Ports of Call and where the Pack Worlds are. Here's where the Vescarium is. There is a area, and I don't know if that is in Ports of Call or not, but a big chunk of thing that's just called swarm space, big chunk of the galaxy, just don't go there, do not go there, here be swarm.
In Warhammer 40K, the maps of the galaxy have where the Tyranids have kind of come in, and that becomes a no-go, sort of same kind of feel.
And two things that I found interesting when I was looking at the swarm stuff. They, of course, all of these creatures now have traits, right? We got to have traits for things. They introduce a new trait, or a couple new traits for this one. But one of the main ones is just called is the cosmic trait, which I think is just, it's big enough. It knows how to survive in the void of space. We don't have to do all that sort of like hoop jumping to understand that this is a thing that's void. What's it called? Like void. It was called like void adaptation or something like
right,
that.
Right. That's what it was before.
But swarm creatures obviously do not have the swarm trait. That is a trait set aside for swarms of things. Really almost kind of shot ourselves in the foot by calling these things a swarm. But it's fun. Have the trait, the Kucharn trait. Now that is a deep dive. If you don't remember, the Kucharn are what the swarm were before they were the swarm.
Before the Sheeran split off them, right?
Yeah, wow. Exactly. I think that's lore from Core Rulebook. That word is just kind of like just sort of tossed out in the original first edition Core Rulebook and the lore stuff at the back. And we could have picked it up a little bit when we did Attack of the Swarm, and we're picking up here for the trait name for swarm creatures, which is always weird because I always like swarm creatures. For some reason, always had to be monstrous humanoids or something like that. Like it was like even though they weren't all humanoid, and it was a weird thing because we had to give them types, a type, and it was we give them different ones, people would get confused. So it was like, I like this a lot better.
I remember that when I was writing for Attack of the Swarm, I have one that's just like some big monstrous pill bug, basically. That has like psychic grumbling all the time, but it has to be a monstrous humanoid, even though it's shaped like a pill bug the size of a cottage.
I mean, the whole thing with those creature types in Starfinder, I thought was already straining at the seams, right? It, you know, we have a lot of weird stuff. Like, what do you call an alien? Is it a human? Even if it, you know, where does humanoid cut line? What do you call things? A monstrous? Monstrous was the word, right? Like, what's monstrous mm-hmm. when you have a world full of aliens? You know, a galaxy full of aliens. What counts as monstrous? So it was always is this just a humanoid with its subtype news, you know, given to it, or is it monstrous humanoid? It was really just kind of like, you know, whatever you feel like. There was no science to it. It was all just sort of guesswork. And go ahead, Ron.
No, I just I think that the sometimes there's a lot of deep lore in picking whatever that trait is that goes on creatures. I think that there was the monitors being the neutral outsiders that are neither celestials nor fiends ended up being a super useful way to categorize.
Yeah.
Without being like just the neutral ones. I mean, it just feels a lot more in depth in the world to talk about monitors, and it's, going back to the Kuchan, I think is really great.
It almost like does this world building through mechanics. That's very interesting. Right? You just kind of get this trait. What's this? Oh, let me learn about it. But also the stat blocks have something that I don't think I've seen in any Pathfinder second edition monster stat block. And it's looks kind of brutal and I love it. The lower level swarm, which is level 3 swarm, has an acidic mouth cannon, spits acid at you, you know, classic swarm stuff, does acid, and it does persistent acid damage, right?
Wow.
Now, if you get hit again by someone, you know, that same creature's acidic mouth cannon or another of these swarm creatures' acidic mouth cannons, that and you're already taking that persistent acid damage, the acid damage damage die goes up one. You're taking a d4 damage, you get hit by one, right? Oh, okay, you know, that's rough, but it is what it is. Then you get hit again, goes up to d6. It's a maximum of a d8, but that still it can be pretty tough. You know, it's just, you know, you're getting hit and taking that going,
well, especially
and
d6 and you third level, right?
Mm-hmm. Your third level, yeah.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah, if you've got, generally fighting. If you're fourth or fifth level, you know, a bunch of third level monsters is not generally a problem. But ones where they can sort of stack on each other's power like that makes them suddenly something to pay attention to.
It's called coordinated digestion.
Yes. Yeah. And they will just swarm you to do that.
Yeah.
Swarm lowercase s in order to do that.
Right? Yes. Fair enough, yeah.
Wow. Well, that's... I think Paizo's released some really cool stuff for free RPG.
Yeah, I mean, Starfinder team hitting it out of the park with this. Like, another thing, again, we should have thought, are those the only monsters that are in there? Yes, but you're getting all this other stuff. You know, the Glitch Gremlin has spells, so the new spells. So here's the description of those new spells. You know, the Squawks, classic, cute little half squirrel, half fox. Hey, guess what? You can have a Squawks companion as well, if you have a class that lets you have an animal companion. Great.
And so here's the animal companion.
Here's the stats for it. Yeah, basically, you know, and what it does when it uses the support action and that kind of stuff. Yeah, it goes for the eyes.
yes.
For its advanced maneuver. So
yeah,
classic squirrel fox,
squirrel fox action. Things.
I didn't think squirrels went for the eyes, but I guess I could be mistaken.
Well, when you're tiny.
Well, where else are they going to go? The Asteray you mentioned as being particularly higher level than the rest.
Yes, that's the level 12.
I'm interested because I want to shoehorn at least some of these creatures into my ongoing Strength of Thousands campaign. But they're 11th level, so it has to be high level stuff for me to shoehorn it in. So, but it sounds like I can do so.
You sure could take this. You can maybe an Asteray is that the, I don't want to spoil anything of Strength 1000, but is that?
Yes, is the answer. It is the one that has some light, it has some light space theming.
Right. Well, this Asteray could have hitched a ride on someone else's space vessel and shown up arriving wherever, you know, your players are. They also have some spells as well. Some of them, which are the new ones, but some of them are, you know, for now, at least classic Pathfinder stuff, like, you know, Gecko Grip, and, you know, Charm. It basically has a three action activity that they open their mouth and just sort of suck everything in. The asteroid opens its mouth to suck in the molecules of an adjacent organic creature or object of small size or larger, and just
wait. It's like a Kirby power.
Eats matter. That's a Kirby power. Yeah, it heals for doing that.
Yeah,
it becomes quickened. And if it's a creature, the creature takes 10d8 void damage with a basic save. Yeah, it's rough stuff. And then they can also just use their, do the siren stuff that they're known for by making fake holographic images, basically.
Wow. I'm excited. I'm actually really excited for the Poppet thing. Ron, you were talking about introducing folks, and I think I've been trying to get Deb to do something, and maybe that would be the in.
Oh, to be able to sit and play something.
Yeah.
Maybe we can arrange that. I think that would work.
Yeah.
One of the things that I thought was really neat about, let me see if I still have them. I don't have them up. It was nice of Paizo to give the pre-generated characters for that. The 8 pages.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which I realize, because I know that a free RPG thing is usually like 16 pages. So it's like they gave you half the book right there. Yeah. Right there. But that's a lot of the they're all second level characters, but a lot of the things that are built with them are kind of behind the scenes builds. So they're not, you don't need to understand what each and every one of their feet necessarily does. You can kind of hide it. It's hidden. It's already worked into the numbers or hidden into the effects. Nice. So it's not, so the lift to learn it is lower, yeah. I think.
Yeah. Very cool.
The two of them are spellcasters, and that's always a little harder, but.
Well, yeah, but even the ones that are spellcasters are the ones that have, they don't have very many options, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And so it's just, second level is just enough for you to be able to say, well, you can do these first rank spells a certain number of times, but that's it.
Yeah. The tricky thing, though, I will say, is that this was written before the remaster. I don't know how remastered it got, because one of them, it was just happened to be a coincidence that I picked Witch.
Ended up in Player Core.
That ended up in Player Core, but there's no Barbarian in Player Core. So,
oh, that's right.
So that is newish. You could wait until Player Core 2 comes out, so you can, and then sort of tweak the Barbarian.
Well, that's not a bad idea.
As needed.
Or not.
Because there's... Or not. It's not going to... It's only going to be out in a month and a half.
Yeah.
If you can get someone together to play the Great Toy House, Great Toy Heist, difficult to say, 5 times fast, in the next month, go for it, obviously, because there's enough... Everything you need to have is there or online, right?
I think we already have a date scheduled. And,
oh, great.
Hooray. The hosts get to choose the game, so I don't know.
We'll leave an empty chair for Scott Keim if he's not there.
Yes. And Jason, because Jason moved away and he's...
I'm in it. I'm
person.
An empty chair for Jason. That's... Yes.
No, I'm floating above you because I wrote it. And that puts me at wherever this game, this adventure is being run, I'm there.
Yep.
Wherever
yep.
there's a young person learning their first... at RPG, I'm there.
You're like Tom Joad. It's you're
yeah, exactly. Thanks for getting that reference. I didn't have it all fully.
It was good enough. It was okay. Yeah. I could tell you were leaning Steinbeckward, and yeah.
All right. Well, this has been great. Again, free RPG day just passed, and if you missed the cool Paizo products, they should be available in by the time you hear this in 25 days or so.
Yeah.
All right. I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.